Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
According to data from flatmates.com.au, the average age of someone looking to live in share accommodation has increased, and the largest jump was in the 60 to 64 age bracket with 43% relative growth, followed by the 50 to 54 and 65 plus age groups. If the hit TV show Friends was remade today, the demographic of the cast of characters would be completely different to Ross and Rachel and gang. Tonight we're chatting about what to look for in a flatmate and the best way to run a harmonious home. And I'd love to hear from you shortly. What is your process for both finding a flatmate and organising the running of your share home? Have you had the flatmate from hell? Do you prefer to live with others than live alone? And we'll also discuss your rights. Now, joining us in the studio this evening is Thomas Clement, CEO of flatmates.com.au. Thomas, welcome to you.
Good evening.
And Leo Patterson Ross is Advocacy and Research Officer with the Tenants Union of New South Wales. Welcome to you as well, Leo.
Good evening.
Does the increase in the median age of people searching for a flatmate surprise you, Thomas?
Well, I think it's in line with the trends in property in Australia at the moment. Things are unaffordable, both in rental and in the buy-sell market. And I think people are looking for other options, and some people have to look for other options.
Tell us about the process they go to if they come to your company, flatmates.com.au, for help.
So we provide a website where those offering rooms can be connected with people that are looking for rooms, and all we do is connect people. It's up to them to then take the process in terms of selecting who they want to live with, communicating, doing viewings and things like that. So we're just an online platform where you meet.
Is it in a way like trying to find romantic partners for people? How much do you look into their compatibility, their likes and their working hours and all that sort of thing?
There's some similarities, obviously, because it involves meeting people, but I think the motivation's very, very different. Everyone needs a place to live. Having a safe, comfortable home to live in that you're happy with is important, whereas looking for a romantic partner maybe online is something that you can take your time with, and you might try on a whole lot of different options and things like that, whereas generally, you can only have one place where you live, and generally when people are looking for something, they need something. It's important. It's an important part of their life.
I mentioned the flatmate from hell. Just about everyone can tell a story of that at some stage or other in their life, of someone who you just won't believe what my flatmate did the other night or didn't do, as is often the case, that can aggravate people, though. Generally speaking, do you think most people, though, have a pretty successful go at it when they are looking for a flatmate or a housemate?
Yeah, I think we always hear the bad stories, and I think that's a few percent, of the ones that go bad. There's many wonderful friendships, many wonderful housing situations, many wonderful things that happen in share houses that maybe we don't hear about because they're just a part of normal life. And when something moves from being housemates to being good friends, you don't talk about being flatmates anymore, do you? You talk about being good friends.
Yeah.
So the story changes.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point that I'll come to later as well, about whether people like to flat with someone they know or a complete stranger and what drives that sort of interest. But Leo, if I can come to you, there are all sorts of rules and regulations that relate to tenancy. And I might point out, you're with us as an advocacy and research officer from the Tenants Union of New South Wales. There are some variations to the rules and regulations and laws around Australia, aren't there? But generally speaking, would most of it pretty much be the same?
Yeah, that's right. Broadly speaking, as with normal tenancy, the rules around the country are generally the same. And state by state, there are small differences that people need to be aware of. So, for instance, Queensland, Victoria, WA, subtenants are covered by their Residential Tenancy Act as normal. In Tasmania, subtenants are never covered by the Residential Tenancy Act, and they don't have the same access to dispute resolution and to the same rules. And in New South Wales, the situation changes depending on whether you have a written agreement with your head tenant and whether they have a written agreement with their landlord. So it really does pay to find out what the situation is in your local area.
How does your status change if you are the tenant on the lease, you're renting a property and you're the tenant, and then someone comes in as the flatmate or the housemate who's also a tenant, but they're not listed legally on any of the documents there? Does the person with the name on the lease have the control?
Yeah, so look, that person really becomes a head tenant, and under the eyes of the law, they really become a landlord. They have the same obligations and rights with their tenants as a landlord would, but they also still have the same rights and responsibilities as a tenant to the landlord, to the owner of the property. So they often get in a really kind of a tight spot in many ways, because they get all the rough side of being a landlord, and they don't get to take home the capital gains. They don't get the negative gearing and all that kind of benefit. So it really, and sometimes they don't mean to be a head tenant or a landlord. You know, sometimes it's very much by accident that they've fallen into the role of being the last person with their name on the lease and having replaced everyone else as subtenants.
How often do you find yourself acting or on behalf of or advising people who are the subtenant? They don't realise it in that sense, but they feel, oh, have I got a legal leg to stand on? I've actually been sharing in this house for 9 years, and now the person with the name on the lease has suddenly turned nasty and wants to kick me out.
Yeah, so our network of tenants' advice and advocacy services around the state of New South Wales talk to a few thousand people each year who are subtenants having some form of issue in their property, whether that's termination or disputes about the utilities or even just personality clashes that people aren't getting along anymore.
Mm. You're running a survey at the moment about share housing. What are some of the common stories you hear?
Yeah, well, the responses so far have been probably illuminating if you don't hear about it every week anyway, you know, from people who have just trashed places to, you know, the landlord being the a de facto third housemate and basically living in the place, to, you know, just utter confusion about who's in charge of what bill and whether the rent's even been paid for months and months occasionally.
And what's the survey about? What do you hope to achieve by conducting it?
Well, we're hoping to get a better idea of what renting in a share house is like in New South Wales at the moment. Obviously, we know from the people that we speak to each week what their stories are like, but we're hoping to reach other people, because the people that we talk to are coming to us with a problem. They're coming to us because something's gone wrong in their place, and we're really hoping to hear from people who maybe nothing's gone wrong, but they might have an experience or an opinion that would help us know better what share housing in New South Wales should be like. I mentioned earlier that if you're in a tenancy and you don't have a written agreement and someone else in the house does have a written agreement, then you're out of the Tenancy Act. And a lot of people don't realise this. And when a dispute arises, they think they might be able to go to the Tenancy Tribunal and get the dispute resolved. They think their bond probably should have been lodged with the Rental Bond Board. And neither of those things are true if you're not a tenant under the Residential Tenancies Act. So we're at the moment talking with Minister Dominello from the Innovation and Better Regulation Ministry about how we can change that. He's been very receptive of these ideas, but we really want to get a better picture of what life is like out there.
Who would you like to complete the survey for you then?
Oh, everybody. Look, anyone who has rented in a share house in the last 5 years. Anytime in the last 5 years. So you don't have to currently be in a share house. But if you have been in a share house in the last 5 years, we'd like to hear from you. And, you know, I looked at the stats earlier today, and about 25% of the people who've completed the survey so far are over 30, and about 10-15 are over 40. So the numbers are high.
Does it take long to complete the survey?
Only 5 minutes.
Very quickly through. Okay. So let's go then, Thomas, to the sort of questions you should be asking. If you're thinking of interview, you've connected two people together who are both looking for a flat in a certain suburb or whatever. They want to be near the station, whatever. What are the sort of questions you should ask and indeed are entitled to ask?
Yeah, I think before you get to the questions, before you get to that stage, it's very important that you have a think about what are the things that are really important to you or the people that live in your house. So what are the things that you must have, and what are the things that you really can't live with and can't have in your house? And every house is different, and there's normally two or three things on each side which are really important. So some examples may be that you know, people have a certain schedule. Maybe they work in not 9-to-5 jobs and they need people to fit around that, or maybe they have a very quiet you know, house, or some houses are vegan or vegetarian, or, you know, some houses have a pet in them. You know, people have to be pet friendly. So you just sort out those really high level important things to start with. And then what our users have told us is the number one way that they decide, make the eventual decision, is on intuition. So the feel of someone when they come around. So are you comfortable talking to this person? Are you comfortable spending time with them? After all, that they're part of your home. You're going to live with them.
Yeah, it sounds very much like a job interview on that basis.
Is it
a firm handshake? Do they present well? Have they turned up on time?
Absolutely.
Are they sober? Yeah. All that sort of thing.
And the advice I always give is I think most people rush it too much. So I always advise to sit down with the potential candidates and have a cup of tea or have a glass of wine, sit and have a chat for a while. It's not a case of just rushing in and looking at the room. And making a decision on that and then hoping that it works out. Like, just spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes. You can learn a lot about someone in 5 or 10 minutes. Mm. And it makes all the difference in the end. And you'll naturally talk about the things that are important. And so I can't really give you a list of ask these questions, don't ask these questions. I would say that if something's important to you, ask it. Mm-hmm. If the person is offended by that, then they're probably not the person for your household. You've done a form of selection right on the spot there.
Yeah. And just legally, can you ask, are you in full-time employment? Can you guarantee that you'll pay the rent every time? Are you divorced, for instance, and you have your 3 teenage sons every second weekend and you want to bring them here to camp as well? I mean, to some degree, you do need to try and probe a little into the personal life to ensure that the person you're going to give a key to or give a room to will be able to pay the rent and pay their share of the bills and, yes, not necessarily bring 3 teenage boys every second weekend to stay.
Yeah, obviously there's some things you can't discriminate on, and you're probably better qualified to talk about that than me, but I think it's important that you also share about yourself as well. So it's not just a one-way interview. This is a two-way conversation, and both sides need
to
share,
aren't they?
Yeah. And some people say to me, well, I don't want to tell the potential flatmate those things. And it's like, well, how are they going to know they want to live with you or not? It's important that you're open. And if you don't feel like you can be open, then either maybe sharing's not for you, or the person that you're not willing to share with is not the right person for you, one or the other.
Mm. It's liable to send up red flags to the person. So,
absolutely.
So legally, Leo, if we can go to those sorts of questions about that, you could breach discrimination laws, for instance, depending on how you speak to someone.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the things that most people really know about, race, sex, gender, are really off the table in terms of the questions you're allowed to ask. Unfortunately, I mean, we do know that those kinds of discrimination happen anyway. Once you know, once you've met someone, you can make a judgment about their cultural background. And if you are a person who's going to make that kind of judgment, it's very easy to do so without anyone finding out why. But look, going back to the income and so on, that is very important and very legitimate for both sides to know exactly where they stand.
Mm. I'm just wondering, to go back to what we were talking about before in terms of making sure you know the right sort of questions to ask and how to ask them is very appropriate. Can you ask to have your name put on the lease?
You can ask. Mostly that decision is going to end up being with the landlord rather than the head tenant that you're asking. They in most states, they have the ability to say yes or no. In some states, they're limited to being having to be reasonable about whether or not they say yes or no. And reasonable will usually mean that they've made some judgment that the person is able to pay the rent and that they don't have a terrible rental history and that kind of thing.
This may be a question for both of you in terms of how many different types of share accommodation arrangements potentially are there? From a 2-bedroom flat to a 6-bedroom house, all that sort of thing, anything
there's,
in between?
There's lots. But the other thing is who's offering the room. So we have about 30% of the rooms offered on Flatmates are owner-occupiers. So it's actually someone renting out a room in their own home.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot that are sublet, which are the ones we've been talking about legally tonight a lot. And then you do have professional landlords, which will rent out room by room in a whole house as well. So you've got those categories to start with. So it's very, very complicated.
It must give you a powerful upper hand if you own the property and you're renting or subletting a room.
Well, I think it changes the dynamic, doesn't it? Because you're inviting someone else into your home and it's very much your home. But some head tenants have that attitude as well. It's their home and they're inviting someone into it. So that's one of the, if you want to start writing a list of questions that maybe you should ask, is what is the situation? Whose is this property? And one of the questions, if it is a rented property, is that I'd always ask is, how long's the lease for? If the lease is up in a month, then you might want to know that. And that might be a problem for you. It might not be. But if you know it, you can make a decision. So asking smart questions.
Yeah. Interesting to know if the head tenant's been there for 10 years and there's been a revolving door of tenants going in. You sort of think, well, how come you've managed to stay, but everybody else has come and gone on a regular basis? That might be a red flag of its own. Do people like to share with someone they know, or do they prefer a stranger?
So our research shows that almost exactly a third of people want to live with close friends or family, like people they know very well. A third want to live with people that are in their wider social network, but not their close friends and family. And a third actually prefer to live with people that they don't know at all. And it's quite, I find that quite interesting because a lot of people...
What drives those different preferences, do you reckon?
Well, I think it's personality. I think some people are very comfortable and want to have familiar people around them or people that they know very well, and that's their personality. And I think there's a lot of people in share that just want to have new experiences and meet new people and have new influences. And, you know, if I think of all the people I've lived with in my life and shared with, I've met some wonderful people that I would have never been exposed to in my normal everyday life.
But it does help if they get the tick of approval from someone you trust. It might be someone at work or another friend who says, I've got a friend or I've got a cousin or someone, and trust me, he or she.
Well, that's kind of the bit of both option, isn't
it? Yes,
you never really get that much diversity because it's still in the circle.
Because my dear old mother, I can remember saying one of her gems of wisdom to me when I first moved out of home was with a mate and his girlfriend. We went in to share a house. She said, just be careful because living together is the best way to lose friends. And I think we can all, you're both nodding.
It can be, smiling. Really can be.
Yeah, you think you know someone, you think you're very compatible and you will get on and what fun we're going to have, but you just don't fully know the little foibles that each of you brings and it's the small things that can build up and disrupt a happy household, can't they?
Too much of a good thing, maybe.
Yes, it can be. You have the party life for a little while and then someone starts to go, hey guys, we really need to back off on this. I've got to do early shifts and that sort of thing that are changing. So you have to be careful about that, but you have to be careful not to be ripped off if someone asks you to transfer money to strange bank accounts and that sort of thing. Leo, you'd suggest caution there?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, look, there are so many ways to transfer money in a safe, secure way. There's no need ever to really use something where you don't know who is receiving the money at the other end. And there are rules in tenancy and in the common law agreements as well about how much money people can ask you for and how much you can be required to pay that are legislated and are quite easy to find on the internet in your state. And anything that looks a bit funny is probably not going to be legitimate. And if you haven't heard of it before, if it seems like something that seems a little bit curious, it's definitely worth checking, getting advice from a tenants advocate or a lawyer, but also just doing your own research.
Mm. And sometimes you may feel it's a bit unfair because the person with the biggest bedroom might be paying the same rent, or sometimes they do vary that according to that sort of thing. And is the biggest bedroom have an ensuite? So should they be paying exactly the same sort of rent? All those things, I suppose, have to be negotiated. Phone bills these days, hardly ever a landline in share houses. Everyone's got their own phone bill. So you're going to have the rent that has to be paid and the utilities, electricity, gas, water, aren't you? And people can pretty much live in their bedroom now, can't they? You can watch television, you can come home from work, say hi guys and go into your bedroom, maybe make a toasted sandwich and not be seen again for the rest of the night.
Although you've left one utility off there, that's the internet. So you might not have a landline anymore, but there's certainly disputes over how much the internet should cost and how much usage everyone should be paying for.
How much the data's going down. I also wanted to ask, in terms of setting rules and guidelines, how many rules and guidelines is it fair to expect a stranger to accept?
Mm. Well, I think, you know, one of the best ways to avoid disputes is to know where everybody stands before you get to the problem. So there is some value in laying out the ground rules early on in the relationship and talking about, you know, what's the deal with the internet here? What's the deal with utilities? When do we pay the rent? When does garbage go out? All that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, if you get presented with a 10-page agreement with all sorts of annotations and weird sort of rules, that puts people off. It doesn't set a nice tone for what is essentially, you know, an intimate living arrangement. So I think there's a balance there. You know, the our de facto or our default tenancy agreement For normal tenants is about 6 pages long, and for share housing arrangements, often they're much, much shorter.
Thomas, you're finding older people are moving into this demographic, the increasing number of people there looking for share accommodation sort of thing. Are they more relaxed or more controlling about what they will and won't accept, do you reckon?
I think they think they're more relaxed, but on the whole, more set in their ways would be the better word.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of older people have a way that they like to live, and maybe that's how they go about their life, and that's important to them, and they've done it for many years. And so that's an important criteria when you come to select someone. Is someone going to fit into that way of life?
And even these people in the older demographic may not be sharing with people in the same age demographic. You've heard of examples where there can be quite a variation of ages in a house.
Absolutely, yeah. And some people like that. Some young people like the stability of having older people around, and they can be quite a stabling influence in the house, sort of a wise head. You get groups of older people living together as well, in terms of we've got this community up on the Sunshine Coast, which is really cool, and they bring people together who are retired, and you have to bring a skill into the community, and so they actually share a whole lot of things. So they share farming, self-sufficient farming, and they need a builder to maintain all the different properties, and they need a cook, and they need gardener, and all these people, and so they have a particular community, and so they have quite a lot of rules about who can come in and who can't come in and things like that.
All right, I might welcome you, the listener, now into this conversation. If there's something you want to add to our discussion, my guests in studio are Thomas Clement, he's the CEO of flatmates.com.au, and Leo Patterson-Ross, Advocacy and Research Officer with the Tenants Union of New South Wales. 1300 800 222. You might like to tell us about the process you've gone through. Have you successfully negotiated filling that spare bedroom or empty bedroom in your flat or house? Are you the head tenant? How do you go about negotiating these things? And or you may have a bit of a flatmate from hell story to share with us. 1300 800 222. You might have a question for Leo in particular, but bear in mind he's from the Tenants Union of New South Wales. He has an understanding of what happens in different states and what's going on, but if you've got a question about your rights, and we're talking about the pluses and minuses of share households, 1300 800 222.
You got the whole world in your hands.
ABC News Digital, local, national and international news live to your mobile device.
You got the whole world.
Access to breaking news in the palm of your hand from Australia's most trusted news source. On your mobile and online at abc.net.au/news.
I hark back. It was nearly 40 years ago when I first moved out of home and moved in, as I said, with a couple of friends. And we all got on famously. So there was no doubt about when, if you bought anything for the house, a loaf of bread, some butter or some cleaning products or whatever, you kept the receipt or put a note in the jar, and end of the month or something would all be tallied up, and a few dollars would go to one and a few dollars from the other. And that sort of thing worked out extremely well. And we had a similar circle of friends. But I've never been in a situation where I've shared where I had my own shelf in the fridge and barely had any contact at all with my fellow housemates. What's that like?
Yeah, it can be isolating, I think. People increasingly, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, and I suspect other cities as well, who've come in for study or work and don't really have a social circle or family to rely on, And they also often don't necessarily have a super high income, faced with the incredibly high rents, and they find themselves in share houses where they have similar people. And if you're lucky, you make friends from across the world and from Australia. And if you're not, then everyone does kind of stick them to them to themselves, and you're just stuck with a really pokey, quite small space. And, you know, obviously there are the horror stories that come up in the news from time to time, where, you know, 20, 30 people are crammed into a 2 or 3 bedroom place. And that would be equally horrible.
And someone moves in as a single and then starts a relationship 2 months later. And guess what? The other half of the relationship doesn't have a permanent base either. Let's go to some of our callers now. Let's start with Ian. Ian, you're looking to buy a renovator's delight and some housemates to help out with that.
Yeah, I've been tempted to move back to the Coffs Harbour Grafton region, sort of west of the old highway as it used to be. There are a lot of old hippie-built 3 or 4 bedroom houses out there that are now coming on the market.
Ian, can you just do me a favour and turn your radio off wherever it is, please?
Yep.
Because we can hear it in the background. It's probably throwing you off as well because we're in delay.
Good on you.
Yep, carry on.
So I've lived up that area before. I've also been in share housing myself before as a tenant. This time I want to be the owner of the property with several other tenants helping me with the costs and also renovating, gardening, etc.
So you want them to help out with this renovation?
Yeah.
And you'll reduce the rent accordingly?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, yeah. All right.
The same with the gardening. Pretty much everything alternative lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I will be totally solar off-grid, water tank, water supply, septic system for the equivalent, whatever the New South Wales authorities allow these days. It's been a while since I've lived in New South.
And what's your area of concern then, if you have one?
How hard is it to find these people?
And the method to go about finding them?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thomas?
Well, the great thing about going on Flatmates to have a look at this is you can go on there and search the profiles of the people that are currently looking in your area or around your area. So you can go on there today and have a look at who's looking in your area, you know, how many people are looking, what type of people are looking. And there's nothing wrong in reaching out to them as well and having a chat to them. We provide a platform where people can communicate. Obviously, if you're not at the stage yet, then you could offer something. Then some people will get frustrated from the fact you're just chatting to them generally. But
actually purchase the property.
Yeah, but you can actually go on there today and have a look. You can do research. It's a bit like when you're about to buy a place. Yeah. You go on property websites and you have a look at what else is in the area and you do your research. Yep. You can do that and you can see how much they're willing to pay and all those sorts of things.
I'm just wondering, in rural and regional areas too, there would be local newspapers. I suppose people would still advertise in the classified section of the local newspaper.
A little bit, but not so much for Flatmates, I don't think, because it's... and especially it doesn't work well this way because people wouldn't advertise wanting one.
Yeah, yeah, housemates and housemates, so. Sounds like you've got an interesting time ahead of you, Ian. We wish you well with it. 1-300-800-222. John's on the line. You've got a story about having a difficult time with a co-tenant, John.
That's right, yeah. Look, I've been divorced once, and it was easier to get divorced than it was to get rid of get out of the co-tenant agreement.
Mm-hmm.
The co-tenant didn't pay the rent, and I asked him to move out. He would not move, and there was nothing I could do about it.
What are your rights? Where do you stand, Leo, in that case?
Yeah, so it is traditionally been a big problem. You know, people move in together as co-tenants, and really legally, you're moving in as one person. You've merged legal entities together, and so you take on the responsibilities of the other person as well. But that also means that you can't easily move them out. Recently, though, in New South Wales, in the last 5 years, the laws changed to allow for the tribunal to hear disputes between co-tenants and to make decisions about if there is special circumstances, for instance, the rent's not been paid for a long, long time, or there's often it's concerning family violence of some sort, the tribunal can make the decision to terminate one or other of the co-tenants and move them on. And there's similar provisions starting to come in across the rest of the country, although not everywhere has caught up.
How did you get rid of him eventually, John?
Well, I stopped paying the rent, and I moved out, which was very unfortunate because the house was very suitable for mm-hmm. me, and I moved out.
And you left him there?
Well, he ultimately got kicked out, mm-hmm. and then the agent came to me and said, "Now, do you want to rent the house?" But the agent was very uncooperative, would not help me in the situation, or could not help me, he claimed. It was a very, very difficult time. I suggest that you, if you intend going into any co-tenant arrangement, to make sure that it's you've got everything covered.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly, John, thanks very much. A note of caution in John's story, 1-300-800-222. You might like to tell us, if you are the head tenant, how you go about interviewing potential flatmates or housemates, or have you been in a situation in the past and how did you resolve it? You've got a story to share, and talk to Thomas Clement, CEO of flatmates.com.au, and Leo Patterson-Ross from the Tenants Union of New South Wales, my guests in the studio. Paul's on the line. You had a 6-bedroom house, some family and some boarders, and it worked out, Paul.
Oh, I just had a wonderful time. All I did was I just interviewed the people. You actually work out whether they're right or they're not. I actually had 2 children in the house, my wife and I and 2 children, and we rented out the other rooms and didn't have any problems whatsoever. I didn't even have a tenancy agreement.
Was there much rotation of the people in the house outside of the family?
No,
they stayed,
had,
did they?
I had someone who lived there for... I had people who lived there for 2 or 3 years.
Mm. And they become
and
part of
no
the family.
No problem whatsoever. You know, I think people are actually... You know, if you don't actually work out whether you're actually interviewing the people to begin with, whether it's actually going to be right or wrong, and then you can actually assess whether they're actually going to sit or they're not going to sit in the place.
And again, to me, it comes back to comparing it to like personal relationships, that you can hit and miss. You can start off a romance with someone and think this is it and so on and so forth, and 3 months later it can be a very bitter situation and circumstance. Leo, I just want to go to the question there that Paul raised of boarders. Now, where do we differentiate between boarders and flatmates or housemates?
Yeah. So boarders and lodgers, and boarders are lodgers who get food. So most people who aren't tenants but living somewhere, you know, at least somewhat permanently, are lodgers in all the states of Australia. And so a lodger has what's called a license to stay in the place rather than a lease. And a license is essentially the owner of the property giving you permission to stay on the property. And when that permission is taken away, you become a trespasser immediately, whereas a lease, they have promised to allow you to use that property as your home for at least a defined period, and generally actually for an indeterminate period. It may not be a very long time, and they may retain the right to ask you to leave, but there's it's a greater property right to be a tenant than to be a lodger.
So we can end up with different levels of protection depending on your status as such, whether you're a flatmate, rent,
yeah,
or boarder,
and different
lodger
avenues to resolve disputes. So lodgers generally can't go to the tenancy tribunals, which are often much less costly and much quicker than the local court.
All right. I probably should have given the text number as well if you want to send a question. 0467 922 702. That's 0467 922 702. On the text line, we've got a question. What is the best way to pay rent between 3 housemates if the landlady wants 1 direct credit? I am currently paying the whole amount and the others are paying me by direct credit, but I'm worried as there is conflict between the other 2 guys.
So look, paying rent and the disputes around it comes up again and again. The best method I've heard of, and Thomas might have one as well, is to actually open up a 3rd joint bank account and have everyone deposit their money in there and then set up a direct account, a direct debit from that account. So then you know exactly how much has gone in. You can see what's happening with that account, but it's no one's one that they are going to be terribly upset about when it gets overdrawn by the agent.
Mm-hmm. Any comment, Thomas, on that?
No, that's the solution we always used to use when I was in Share years ago, that we always had a joint account and we used it for everything, bills and everything. So we just deposited a set amount in there every month and everyone knew how much. I guess it's the modern version of the money jar that you had when you were sharing.
Well, it is, but these days it can be done so quickly. If you say to someone you've forgotten the rent, they can just pick up their laptop or whatever and zoom, bang, 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 and the money's transferred, isn't it? So those things can be resolved pretty quickly. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222, if you'd like to join this discussion or send a text. 0467 922 702, as we talk the pluses and minuses of share households. Let's go to Annette now. Hello, Annette.
Hello.
You've had various experiences with the flatmates and you did some of this in the UK, did you?
I did, where it's quite acceptable, an acceptable thing to do over there.
For people in an older age demographic?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 66, I'm a nurse, and I've just come back to Australia. I've had moved back into my own home in the inner city. Don't like being on my own, and I've had housemates from flatmates.com. It's all worked fine.
In your own age bracket or?
No, much younger. Okay. I've had like 20s, late 20s.
What do you reckon 30s. Are the things to look for to make sure you get the right person?
Oh, you get a gut instinct on who you're going to have in living with you. And a lot of people, I think, don't want party houses anymore. It's sort of, I get couples to come and stay with me and they're over party houses and that sort of thing, and they want a home and they like cooking and traveling and things that I like doing, and it's a great experience.
Have but a cooking one... roster, a cleaning
oh,
roster,
no,
all that sort
no,
of thing?
No, very laid back. We, we all pitch in and do it. But it's certainly not regimented. But
no.
My rules, it's an open plan house, so I don't like a lot of rubbish downstairs in the living area because, I don't care what happens on the mezzanine level or whatever. But, it's my home. But everyone seems to respect that, and they always have in England too.
And respect's a key word, particularly in those common areas, isn't it? If it's the lounge, if it's the kitchen, if it's the bathroom.
Yeah, if the common area's nice, that's fine. What they do in their own rooms is up to them. But I will say one thing, and that is in the UK, you don't have to pay tax on having someone share your home, because that's an incentive to do with the housing crisis. And here, of course, you do pay tax on it. Mine's put into my account. I work part-time and I'll have to pay tax on it. So, it's when they talk about housing shortages here, I think it would be a great way to address it.
I think the UK, because I've spent a lot of my life in the UK as well, and one thing that I think they've done a lot better than we've done over here is they've started formalising share accommodation as a viable mainstream source of accommodation for people. And Australia's just kind of let it fall through the cracks a little bit. And we've been working with a lot of different... we've been working with the New South Wales government, the Queensland government and the Victorian government, and just recently the Western Australian government, on trying to formalise share accommodation and solve a lot of these legal issues we're talking about. We've written submissions, we've explained how important it is, we've explained the problems, we've even provided some solutions. And along with that is this rent-a-room scheme. Australia is about the only Western country that doesn't have that. They have that in New Zealand, they have it in England, they have it in Ireland, where if you rent out a room in your own home, you don't have to pay tax on that, which makes sense, because if you rent out a property as a business, you don't have to pay tax on that. In terms of, you do if you make a profit, but you can take out the costs before you get taxed.
Is anyone trying to change the rules and the regulations and the laws to allow that to be the case?
It's very difficult. And I think one of the things that holds Australia a little bit back in this regard is the state-based system, because you have to change it in every state. So it becomes a whole lot of little problems rather than just one big national problem. So I think it makes it harder. I hope it'll change one day. But It's too difficult at the moment, I think.
And I'm just wondering if any of you have had issues with a flatmate or a housemate. How did you resolve them? What was the diplomatic wrangle that you went through? How did you make things better again? Because you didn't want to particularly lose the housemate or the flatmate involved. How do you deal with those issues? Or is there a meeting once a month or something? 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. But if it comes to that and you have to end a share arrangement, what's the best way, Leo, to do that if things don't work out?
So look, it really does depend on what the arrangement is and what legal rights every party has. But, you know, ultimately, if the relationship's broken down and you're just not getting along, most people are going to agree that it's best if everyone or at least one person moves out. And so every state allows for tenants and landlords and co-tenants to consent to ending a contract. If both parties are in agreement about something, generally you can do whatever that thing is. It's trickier and it's harder and often it's more emotionally tolling when the two sides don't agree about what should happen. And often, you know, from our perspective, that's where the landlord says, you should probably leave. And the tenant says, well, I've got nowhere else to go. How much time, you know, can I get? And so on. And if you're a tenant, then you're generally, if you've breached the agreement, then the shortest you can be given is 14 days. And if you haven't breached the agreement and you're covered by tenancy law in New South Wales, it's 90 days. In Victoria, in other states, it might be 60. It changes all over the country. The problem comes up when you're not covered by residential tenancy law and you are a lodger, as we talked about before. And usually the termination periods for that can be as short as a week. It's usually the rent period that you pay. But because of the way that agreement operates, when you have a license and the permission to be there is taken away, you immediately become a trespasser. And property owners occasionally do take it into their own hands to just move on the person, and head tenants do as well, which puts them at risk of being sued if they've made a mistake and they've misjudged how much they could take matters into their own hands, as well as obviously putting the person being made to leave into a very tough position because they may not have anywhere else to live, and they may either spend a lot of money in some kind of temporary accommodation in a hotel or something, or even, you know, we hear of people having to sleep in their car, having to sleep in the doorway for the night or two until they get themselves sorted.
And how much bond you paid initially, and are you entitled to the full thing back? Should there be interest on top of it? A lot of that has to be negotiated.
Yeah, and look, many subtenants, many people who aren't covered by the tenancy law essentially feel like they just forfeit that bond because they've got no practical way of getting the money back if the head tenant doesn't agree to it. I mean, you know, even mainstream tenants often feel like they will lose some of it almost automatically, even though that's really not the case. But particularly subtenants, and particularly those who don't have access to tenancy tribunals and don't have access to the really clear-cut, easy to understand and well thought out, considered by government kinds of legislation, really find themselves in a very tough position.
On the text line, Kate is asking, can an owner of the property do maintenance, that is plumbing and electrical work, when said owner is not qualified to do that work?
So landlords generally have to maintain the premises in a reasonable state of repair. And it's quite easy to argue that a person who doesn't really know what they're doing is probably not maintaining the property in that reasonable state of repair. There's not a formal requirement in most jurisdictions that it has to be a qualified plumber, or a qualified tradesperson. But if you are undertaking electrical work, particularly and plumbing work, often you do have to be registered. You do have to be qualified. So landlords who do take it into their own hands often take quite a big risk of both damaging their own property and wasting a lot of time and effort, as well as facing problems with their tenant and even problems with the regulator.
All right, we are 6 minutes away from the next ABC News, but time for you to call 1-300-800-222 if you have a question or a comment. Trudy's given us a call. Trudy, you want to talk about how renting income can decrease Centrelink benefits?
Yeah, that's right. A friend of mine was sharing with me at one stage And because she wanted to get her rent assistance, I had to then tell them that she was living with me and paying rent. And I lost a small portion of my payment. And it's just really not worth it.
And you were trying to do the right thing by the friend who needed accommodation.
Yeah, well, she did live here, but in the future, if I decide to rent out a room, I'd be somewhat hesitant to do that because it's not worth it in the end.
It reduces your pension or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's an opportunity for Trudy to perhaps call a fellow flatmate a boarder or a lodger as such.
Well, if they pay you money,
It's still going to impact, yeah.
It's another example of where share accommodation's falling through the gaps and where it's been ignored in the legislation, really. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, we've got property shortages in this country and price problems. And there's a really simple solution here. There's about 9 million properties, residential properties in Australia, and most properties have an empty room then.
Yeah, there was a big story about halfway through the year, wasn't there, about the number of places that are occupied by people, they've been family homes,
yeah,
that might have three or four bedrooms, but there's, yeah, only one of the parents maybe still alive, still living there, but they like to keep the rooms for when the children and the grandchildren come to visit, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a difficult situation. Rob, poor old Rob's got a story. You spent just one night in a share house, Rob. Couldn't last any longer?
Sorry, what was your name again?
Tony.
Tony, and the other chap, sorry?
I have with me Thomas and Leo.
Thomas and Leo. Hi, excuse me. Yeah, no, I was at a change in my life. I'd left the New South Wales Fire and Rescue, got divorced, blah, 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 and I ended up getting a gardening job and riding a push bike to a gardening job, and I didn't know where to live, and I knew there's two nurses that said, you can live with us, and I sort of just went along with it, you know, at the time. And the first night I arrived, there was dogs and having babies everywhere in the kitchen and cats running over the plates. And then when I went to bed, there was dog's feces on my bed from the puppies. And then when I got up in the morning, I was cleaning. This is serious. And when I was cleaning teeth and having a shave, this really wow of a noise was coming under the vanity. And it was a cat having kittens.
Oh, no. Oh. So no wonder you only stayed the one night.
So then I went to work the next day just telling the story to my fellow gardener friend and getting quite a laugh out of it. You know, whoa, how do you get out of that one real quick, you know? So anyway, riding the push bike back to the house, there was a station wagon taxi, you know, like this is some years back, you know. A taxi station wagon, you know, just not too far ahead. And I was able to catch it at a red light and asked him, can he follow me, you know?
Come back to my place. I'm going to get my bags and chuck them in the car. Rob, I'll leave it there because I do want to get to a question from Ken on the text line. If the ownership of property changes and you're not told, what impact does this have with regards to the 90 days to leave? Is it reduced? Asks Ken.
No. When the ownership changes through sale, the landlord who used to own the property can give you 30 days notice in New South Wales that the number changes across the country. Telling you that the property has been sold and saying that you have to leave, that happens before settlement of the property. And it's the current owner, if you like, rather than the new owner. If something happened like an inheritance or, you know, that they sold the property but didn't tell you and it's all settled and it's all done, then that person has become your landlord. They have the same rights and responsibilities as your old landlord, and nothing's changed about either the lease that you're in, if you've got a current lease on foot, or if you're in a continuing agreement or a month-to-month agreement, the 90 days or the periodic, what we call no grounds termination. Nothing changes.
Okay. We've got 90 seconds till the news. Let's see if we can squeeze in Melanie's question and get an answer. Hello, Melanie. What's your question?
Yes, just very quickly. I would like to know, I left a property in perfect condition and had won the award for the best rental property on the Mornington Peninsula. When they came to inspect, they said that they wanted $500 back for cleaning because there was cobwebs all left on the deck. And I wanted to know if that was part of the regular uptake, that the cleaning that you were meant to be on top of.
Mm. So generally... people have, or tenants have the responsibility to return the property in a similar condition to how they received it, less what's known as fair wear and tear. And fair wear and tear is about the natural forces acting on a property. You know, sunshine fades carpets and so on. There's not much you can do about that. Things like spider webs and dust and things that kind of appear throughout the tenancy, kind of no matter what you do, you do have to keep it clean, but it does matter how what the property was like when you actually moved in and how easy it is to actually fix that problem. It may be beyond a tenant.
Challenging issues, Melanie. We'll have to leave it there. Thomas Clement, CEO of flatmates.com.au, and Leo Patterson-Ross, Advocacy and Research Officer with the Tenants Union of New South Wales. We thank you both for bringing your expertise to this discussion. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.